Zero451, an occasionally weekly podcast on tech security from an anarchist perspective. I'm your host, Burst Goodness. This is the start of maybe something that could be called a new season, and we'll see how many episodes we can actually crank out. In our first bunch of episodes, or season, or whatever that was, we featured conversations about cryptocurrencies, safer approaches to maps on mobile devices, how your phone tracks you and how it doesn't, how to purchase and set up a burner device, PGP email encryption, what the Cambridge Analytica revelations told us about social media, how to deal with getting doxxed, and more. On this episode, I'm joined by Hernani Marquez, a hacker and member of the PEP Foundation, talking about Pretty Easy Privacy, a concerted effort to make adoption of end-to-end encryption easier and more ubiquitous through automation of keymaking and management by partnering with programs like Outlook and Thunderbird. To learn more about PEP, check out the Foundation's website, pep.foundation, and follow or get in touch with Hernani via their website, vecirex.net. I'd like to apologize for the audio quality of this interview. The fault was mine. Mea culpa. Mea maxima culpa. I'd also like to thank Hernani for chatting and for literally making the episode possible, and my co-host from The Final Straw, William, for cleaning up my mess. Kind as to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yes, so I am Hernani Marquez, working for the PEP Foundation. I do most administrative things here and also coordinate the work. And on the other hand, I'm also very active in Swiss hacker communities like Chaos Computer Club, which is well known in Europe, at least looking at it from Germany, where it started. So that's also a little bit the motivation we have here. If you look at the hacker ethics, which the Chaos Computer Club has, it's a lot about privacy and freedom of information. But as you know, and also the listeners will know, these things are heavily threatened. So we had Snowden revelations and lots of other things going on. And I think we need to take technical measures here to help people to protect themselves, but also organizations, of course. I mean, without making a difference. So just everyone needs to be able to protect their privacy and freedom of information. And so this project where I am now, Pretty Easy Privacy PEP, where there's a foundation where I am most active, but also companies creating software around it. So that's a project in that sphere, let's say, to protect privacy.
For someone who's maybe new to thinking about privacy and about open source, could you see how there might be a little conflation of maybe that those two things are at odds, a freedom of information, an open communication and transparency at the same time, privacy or security in people's communication, a sort of like, well, it's maybe a privacy for some parties and not for others. It's kind of a dumb point to make, but what would you say if somebody was kind of confused?
I mean, we subscribe to the Cypherpunk manifesto, which exists since the 90s, which says that privacy is the power to selectively reveal oneself to the world. So that's something which you usually don't have that easily nowadays. I mean, if I write a post on Twitter or Facebook, or I create a website, there perhaps I don't care about my privacy because I want everyone to know. Of course, when you come with direct messages which exist there, that things start to become a little bit more complicated, because you may think that you are communicating in private, but they are collecting everything. And also when you write an email, for example, or another kind of message, then your assumption is also usually that only the one receiving it should be reading it, and not just everyone. But technically, it's just not that easy to ensure that. So we know that lots of agencies and also companies are making mass surveillance, mass collecting all these things, and yeah. So we want to be able to provide solutions here to realize this kind of perception people might have about that kind of communication. Privacy is something which only persons have. I mean, it's not something an organization or a state can have. I mean, there it's probably about confidentiality or secrecy. So we also need to distinguish things here. But in the end, I mean, for our project at least, it doesn't matter. We just want to protect people. And this can also, of course, be people working in public offices or companies. In general, it's also an issue if you would start to distinguish here and to create solutions for some of them and for some not, because we want everyone to be able to engage in private communications. Otherwise, it doesn't work at all. I mean, if it's just about creating a tool which a small community is able to use it, then for most of the rest of your communication, you are unprotected again. So that's not very helpful. Besides that, also public offices, for example, can also be dealing around with our data, and it would be nice if this kind of stuff would also be protected. So we talk a lot of privacy, but it's also about, you know, if you're an organization, company, or a state, then it can also be about confidentiality, of course.
Can you talk a little bit about the project? I hadn't actually heard of PEP, or Pretty Easy Privacy, until just a couple of months ago, or like a month and a half ago, when my email client suddenly it was teamed up inside of Enigmail. And I know that it predates this, obviously, but earlier this summer, I had spoken with Micah Lee of The Intercept about eFail as a large scandal. And the implementation of PEP or PEP almost kind of felt like a response to that. And so I'm kind of like wondering if you could talk about the history of PEP. Sorry, loud car.
The project is going on already since a while. We've announced it already in 2014, but not many people were working on it. So it was more like, or it was not before 2016 that really lots of people started to join in to do this work. So it's going on more intensively since 2 years, I would say. And the motivation for it emerged out of the crypto party movement, which several people might know. As an event type, which is about helping people to protect themselves. So it emerged, I mean, it was already there before, perhaps under names like Sensitive Self-Defense Course or whatever, but especially after Snowden revelations, there were lots of inquiries everywhere, how can people protect themselves now, and at least in Switzerland, Germany, the bigger cities here. There were lots of these crypto parties where people just joined into meetings, which we publicly announced, for example, as CCC groups, to help them to encrypt emails and to browse like anonymously with Tor and other things. And especially for the email part, we had to learn that people are just not able to carry out the steps. And if you look at Enigmail in its classic version, or on other solutions which exist for Outlook or other mail user agents, I mean, as soon as you talk about keys and that you have to generate keys and then to share your public key and then to decide if it's about putting in on servers or sending it directly and things like that, people just fail. So it must. If you talk about protecting email in the most easy way possible, we think it must go into a direction like it happens with the instant messengers which we have out there, where these things just happen transparently. So you just install the app, or in our case, for solutions like Thunderbird or Outlook, you need to install an add-on, and then things just happen automatically, and protection is added to every email as far as possible. So for email, of course, you need to have the public keys of the recipients. So we facilitate these steps by attaching these public key materials to the emails, so that if people are able to import them manually, or if they have PEF, then it gets imported automatically, so that people can just start to encrypt automatically without noticing it. I mean, we show it, as you can see in Enigmail. We have like a color rating system where you can see what's going on, if the message is protected or not, if it's a verified message or not. But in the end, it's just about having a solution which automatizes these steps which we told people to carry out at crypto parties, and where we think we failed with it, because adoption, after hundreds and hundreds of crypto parties all over Europe, adoption of email encryption was still and is still nowadays very low. In both private communities as well as in communication with organizations. And we think that this is an issue. You can of course say that email is not that important anymore because there are lots of instant messaging things, but in fact, if there is something which everyone has as an internet user, then it's an email address. You need it almost for everything, to buy flight tickets, to have to get. I mean, you can also add your phone number, but there are certain people still feel a little bit more uncomfortable with it. So most people add email addresses also to create social media accounts and stuff like that. So you have it a little bit everywhere, and we think that's a very important channel to protect. And it has another advantage. As soon as you have this channel protected, if people have PEP or a similar solution which allows them to protect their emails, then you can also add other channels to clients, so that they can connect to people which are on other channels like chat systems. I mean, that's also part of the PEP idea, that we start with email because it's the biggest like identity system where you can reach everyone. But we want to add other channels to it as soon as we have some adoption here.
Yeah, so that seemed it seems to me that the one of the higher thresholds for people to pass to be able to get into encryption, like we've thrown crypto parties with friends here, and it's been, it's about knowing the people, and there's like a trust, like a level of trust that's a basis in encryption, or in a lot of these, like in PGP at least, and other things like that, or on Signal. If someone's security number changes, you have ways of verifying it's actually still the same person and that it's not a man-in-the-middle attack. And if you don't know people and you want to meet people for the first time, it's kind of hard to access their, to set up encryption if you can't be in the same physical place and actually share keys with each other. And so this is pretty cool that it just automatically attaches a public key.
And so, we do that, by the way. There are other people doing it in other ways, like adding header fields and stuff. But the issue there is that you need adoption of that first for it to work. And with attaching it, you kind of, which is very important for email, you kind of have this compatibility to other people having PGP solutions like let's say semantic PGP, for example, or classic Enigmail or whatever, and so they can still just import the key and engage in secure communication.
Is it as easy to embed PEP keys as it was PGP keys? Like if you have a publicly listed email address and people attach their keys right there in the signature for the key, can you do the same thing with the key files, the public key files for PEP?
Yeah, also PEP just imports the keys which are attached until a certain limit of 20 because of denial of service things. I mean, we could basically add thousands of keys, so we just rate limit it a little bit. But otherwise, if you add just keys to the, if you manually attach your key as a PGP user, then PEP will import it, yeah.
Is it easy to, like, I work from a number of different computers and devices. Is it easy to be able to access the same encrypted, like, because it automatically encrypts your folders or your, the contents of your folder, is it easy to share that key among different devices and different operating systems so that you can access those contents on each device?
That's of course a major feature which we need. We are working on that exactly now. It will be shipped as soon as possible. I think it's about weeks, so that you can share your private key through different devices. I mean, it works through IMAP. I mean, if you have like two devices, let's say an Android phone and Outlook, and you install PEP on both of these devices, then of course the devices don't know anything about each other and generate key pairs. But if it's about the same email address, they are talking to the same mailbox. So that means you can use like the same channel to exchange the private keys, of course, after you authenticated that you are the owner of the device. And we do that by comparing the fingerprints of both devices in form of words, which we call trust words. So we merge them together to both fingerprints of both key pairs and show words on both sides. And if you accept that, then the private key material of devices is shared through IMAP, but of course in an encrypted and authenticated manner. And then you can define which one is the primary key pair to use. And by default, we don't ask questions here. We just use the oldest one, the oldest key pair, which was set up, which is still valid and not revoked. Such that, you had a device to an already existing environment, and you might want to continue to use the old key. But we call this feature like key synchronization or key sync, and it's very clear to us that we need that, and it's being developed. Also, if you talk to companies about that, I mean, there is a company which also wants called PEP Security, which also wants to put that into companies, and they always ask, how can we read the same emails in Outlook as well as in iOS? That's the most common scenario they have. But also, of course, as you said yourself, also for private people which have like tablets and smartphones and desktops, you need to fix that. I mean, there's even the quite well-known email from Phil Zimmer where you see that he replies to someone saying he cannot read that encrypted mail on that device, please send it later or unencrypted. And that's really something which needs to be solved. That's clear, yeah. We're working on it. It's not yet deployed.
So this is an open source project, and I understand open source to be important for a number of reasons, including so that people who are engaging with the technology, especially people who have built up a sense of knowledge around it, can look for weaknesses or look for backdoors or whatever else is like a, there's an, again, a trust element to it. Is pretty easy privacy a thing that you're soliciting more help with, because you say that you're working on stuff, or do you have like teams already set up that are in the process of working on the code?
Yeah, I mean, for now, we do most of the work like directly with organizations we set up and people we employed, but we intend to open up all our things in a way that people can easily contribute. At the moment, it's not yet that open, because we wanted to have first like enough running code on very different platforms to have a basis, and then accept contributions. Otherwise, we thought we would be too much engaged in doing community work instead of just coding the important bits. So we are like focusing first on having it. But I mean, the source code is already out there. Even for stuff we did not yet release, like iOS. We even find the iOS source code on the GPL online. So yeah, I mean, at least we have already the free software out there, but we need to also engage better with the communities. There is of course one exception with the Enigmail project, where we like connected with Patrick Dunschwig, the lead developer, who's also Switzerland, quite early, and they started to implement that, and finally we got a running version there, which is now released. But I mean, if there is an open source project out there, some mail user agent project, I think the GNOME people were also talking about it. If they want help to integrate it, of course we are here to do that. But let's say we started with a more like professional setting, because we realized quickly that this is a huge project. We need to take care of lots of platforms, and we don't want to wait for 10 years to have it, but to do it as quick as possible. And for that we need money to pay people, so that we don't have to rely on people working only in the spare time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, where can people find more information about Pretty Easy Privacy?
If you just want to try out the software directly, at the moment that's possible for as you said already, for Thunderbird with Enigmail or Android or Outlook, then you can go to pet.software, so software as a top-level domain, pet.software. There you find it already for three platforms. iOS should be out very soon. If someone wants to help with beta testing in iOS, just drop us an email, for example, at contact@pet.foundation, then we can add people into the beta into test flight program, as it is called on in the Apple world there, for software not yet released. And otherwise, pep.foundation, I think, for the foundation is a good starting point to see a little bit what we are doing.
Well, thank you so much for making this work and for taking the time to have this chat. Is there anything that I in my ignorance didn't ask about that maybe listeners might find useful when grappling with PEP and switching over their encryption system?
No, I think the most important things you said concerning now the work we are doing, I mean, it's probably also noteworthy that we are also working on other ends, because the project is like very ambitious in what we want to achieve. So we are also working with the GNUNet people, and even have paid people there helping to make it useful. GNUNet is a peer-to-peer framework. I mean, you might know these apps which exist, like Ring or Tox and others, which allow you to have chat systems inside a peer-to-peer system where there is no server infrastructure, but just like people with their cell phones or desktop systems creating an encrypted network where they can interconnect and then also send messages around. And GNUNet is a framework for such systems, so you could basically replace the internet protocols with it, because it has a replacement for every of these layers, including a messaging subsystem, which we want also to use for PEP later on, so to have solutions which go beyond email. So email for us is like, I mean, we are not really fans of email, but as I said already in the beginning, it's the easiest way to have users, because it's already out there. But then we want to go forward, because we don't think that email is the future, really. I mean, it's still very much used, that's clear. Every company and every individual you can achieve by that channel, but it's not very, it's not a very optimal system if you look at all this metadata leakage which you still have and stuff. So we need other systems here in place. And so for that, we are working with the GNUNet project. If you want to learn more about that, go to GNUNet.org. There is really extensive documentation about that system. And we are very serious with it, so we are already working on that. Integrate it as soon as possible into the PEP architecture, so that we can use it for, yeah, let's say, more advanced encryption, also with forward secrecy and other channels. And this would of course then be available for users using PEP or people who use other apps based on this GNUNet system. We can also try to bridge to other systems already deployed, of course, in between, like POX, Ring, or other Jabber users. But yeah, one step after the other. Now we are at the email level and already thinking on, let's say, that, the other levels out there, but yeah, it will take some time, I think. And then we also have another interesting project, which is important for the PGP community. It's called Sequoia PGP.
Like the tree?
Yeah. Yeah, so we employed at the foundation three former GNUPG developers which were not very happy with the architecture of GNUPG. And so they started to work on Sequoia PGP, which you find under Sequoia, like the tree, -pgp.org. So that's like another project we had. And we want to integrate that into PEP engine, so that's like the core part we use on all systems, to replace GPG, because we really have deployment issues. I mean, also, if you look at Enigmail, for example, if you download Thunderbird and then you install the Enigmail add-on, you will be asked if you want to install GPG for Win. On macOS, you will be asked if you want to install some GNUPG from Patrick Brunschwig, the main dev of Enigmail, so he has an own version he built. And on Linux, you are probably fine because most distributions already have GNUPG. But we really have a deployment issue here with the way GNUPG is set up architecturally. So we want to have like a simple library, which also allows for some advanced features which GNUPG doesn't have. I think it would also be interesting for other people working with PGP. I mean, PGP, as you know, is not only useful for email encryption, it's also for packet verification and stuff like that. So check signatures, so this can also be interesting for such folks. So if someone wants to look at that specifically, just go to sequoia-pgp.org. There were also articles about it and posts on Reddit, for example, and Hacker News, so you find some information about it if you enter sequoia-pgp.
And I'll include these links and links to some of those articles in the notes for this podcast, too.
I can also send it to you, yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you so much for your time and for all this work that you're doing.
Yeah, thanks.
If you have a topic or guest suggestion for Error 451, find us via our contact page on our website and drop us a line. That's thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. where you can also hear past episodes of the podcast. You can check out the links in the show notes, and that's also up in our podcast feed, which is very, very easy to subscribe to. If you'd like to email us, you can reach us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, and there's a PGP key up on our website. Keep an eye out for our next episode, a chat with Kali Kaneko of the Leap Encryption Access Project, to talk about Bitmask VPN. If you use riseup.net services, you may have noted for a while that they've been offering levels of VPN and encryption services, and Bitmask has shown up on the site in relation to that service. On the 18th of December, you may have gotten an email about a beta test that was inviting you to participate in the beta testing. Well, if you visit riseup.net/beta test and log any bugs you see, you can help the birds at RiseUp and their partners at Leap get this free VPN beta service up and running at a higher quality. Exciting!
If you'd like to hear more of these chats or our weekly radio show on anarchist actions and ideas, check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org.
Hide the planet! Hide the planet!
Shut up and get in the car!
Hey!